These angry young men, as they came to be called from the title of L.A. Ball's autobiography, Angry Young Man, published in 1951, represented a revolt against their age, a rejection of traditional values, and an aspiration to something different. Some of them were from the right, others from the left. Many were unclear and uncertain of their aims and position. All of them, however, had some quarrel with events and aspects of the times. The fall of Winston Churchill's cabinet in 1945, even before the war with Japan was over, this was considered by many a monstrous case of national ingratitude, and the election of Clement Attlee's Labour cabinet, which, however, didn't quite mark the start of a new era of the common man, bringing real democracy to the workers of England. The dissolution of the colonial empire, 1947-1948, India, Pakistan, Ceylon, Burma, Egypt, the Sudan, Iran, Israel, became independent, gradually followed by most of the other dominions and colonies, with a consequent loss of political prestige and military importance. Even Jimmy Porter clearly feels a nostalgia for the days of the empire. The failure of a socialist utopia to come through, even with the application of the Beveridge Plan and other reforms, for example, the nationalization of the Bank of England, railways, motor transports, airlines, telecommunications, the coal, gas, steel and electric power industries, the medical services, and the establishment of the welfare state and a practically universal system of social security. The end of the social revolution in 1951, with the return to power of a Churchill cabinet and the economic failure of the Festival of Britain. The fact that it became gradually apparent that there was little substantial difference between a Tory and a Labour cabinet, just as between a Democratic and a Republican administration in the USA, with the consequence that many young people became politically disillusioned. The false euphoria of the new Elizabethan age, following the accession of Queen Elizabeth II to the throne in 1952, the discrepancy between political vision and social dream on the one hand, and reality at home and abroad on the other. The political, military and economic decline of Great Britain, which was now definitely a second-class power, a feeling of a helpless impotence before the might of the USA and the Soviet Union, with their aggressive ideologies, their enormous armies, their intercontinental missiles, and their atomic and hydrogen bombs, the last especially making any dream of personal heroism and effective protest entirely futile. The pseudo-affluence of the post-war years, with its economic miracles, not in England, and its problems of overpopulation, technocracy and pollution. The religious establishment, the laxity and irrelevance of the Anglican Church. The attempt to revive religious belief, seen by many, including Jimmy Porter, as an irrational escape from the dangers, terrors and evils of the nuclear age. The social establishment, the stifling power of the middle classes, the educational establishment, and the fact that, though many more young people went to university than before the war, they weren't absorbed within the dominant class and often remained outsiders. Jimmy has studied in a university, which he affects to despise, but is now selling sweets in a kiosk. The collapse of the literary establishment of the 30s. The old literati were now seen as empty windbags, capable only of producing hot air. See Jimmy's comment on university professors and their literary interests. The English Sunday, with its stifling atmosphere of stagnation and its Sunday papers. See Jimmy's comments in the play. In 1956, in particular, there were the Hungarian Revolt and the Suez War. The Egyptian nationalization of the Suez Canal, followed by Israeli, English and French intervention, and finally by the UN intervention as a neutral surveillance force. There were also the campaign against capital punishment and the one for nuclear disarmament with its marches and sit-downs. The consequences of the general feeling of disillusionment and impotence, "There are no good causes left," says Jimmy, were often empty rage, social irresponsibility, political cynicism, self-centered attitudes. You, Joe, I'm all right. Insolent bad manners, the coarsening of the language, which becomes slangy and often vulgar and obscene, a revolt against traditional sexual mores, a refusal to accept long-established conventions, always seen as forms of hypocrisy, iconoclasm, a sometimes hysterical search for honesty, also sincerity, decency, a new form of often morbid sensitivity to the evils of the world and a total inability to accept the fact of suffering, a profound desire for some sort of a lost innocence, the rise of the anti-heroes, a whole generation of malcontents, tough, rude, clumsy, ill-dressed, ill-washed young men who find the whole world disgusting and false. A desire to opt out of society altogether. Stop the world, I want to get off. Many of these attitudes are clearly observable in Jimmy Porter. Many precedents and analogues have been pointed out for the Angry Young Men movement, starting from Christ's anger against the merchants in the temple and proceeding all the way down to H.G. Wells, Arnold Bennett, Thomas Hardy, Bernard Shaw, and especially D.H. Lawrence and George Orwell, the intellectuals who took part in the Spanish Civil War, W.H. Auden, Stephen Spender, C. Day Lewis, Roy Campbell, Eric Ibsen and August Strindberg, the Italian Futuristi, François Sagan, Céline and the French existentialists, and many others. In conclusion, we may say that though the movement drew a lot of attention in the 50s, it was not an entirely new phenomenon, and with the 60s it gradually died down and finally disappeared, while the political, social and cultural atmosphere of England progressively changed. At the time of writing this introduction, British life certainly presents a number of interesting aspects and characteristics, but anger is definitely not one of them, with the exception, of course, of the Ulster problem. A movement similar to that of the Angry Young Men developed in the USA during the same period. Its representatives were called the Beat Generation, also Beats or Beatniks, and the principal names were Jack Kerouac, On the Road, 1957, The Dharma Bombs, 1958, Clelo Holmes, John Mandel, Chandler Brossard, William Lee, D.H. Salinger, The Clatcher in the Rye. Its famous hero, Holden Caulfield, is however far different and gentler than the typical beatnik, the poets Allen Ginsberg and Kenneth Rexroth, and many others, also in the fields of the cinema and the arts. The America Beatniks Rebellion, however, was far more of a total withdrawal from conventional society than the English young men's, and was often associated with the excessive use of alcohol and narcotics and other antisocial attitudes. It also became involved with vagabondage, total sexual freedom, and other often picturesque phenomena, the long hairs, flower people, hippies, communes, etc. While at first it appeared, therefore, as an almost totally negative attitude, it has more recently developed into a new commitment and a strong involvement with the tragic American, but not exclusively American, problems of our generation, such as the atomic menace, racial discrimination, the freedom of education and employment, the problem of minorities in general, the drug problem, industrial pollution, the political tyranny of the military-industrial complex, women's liberation, black power, the freedom of political dissent, anti-colonialism, the Vietnam War, etc. It would therefore appear that while the anger of the English young man has by now run its course and is no longer effective or even operating, the protest of the younger generation of American intellectuals, writers, artists, students, minority groups, and even politicians has ample scope for activity and shows definite promise for the future.